Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello, and welcome to the PM Lessons Learned monthly PMP exam study group conference call and podcast. This is podcast number 116. We're recording this session on the 3rd of March, 2011, and we are totally focused on version 4 of the PMBOK guide. My name is Dana Safford. I'm your host for this PM Lessons Learned monthly PMP exam study group conference call and podcast. I've been a PMP since version 2 of the PMBOK. I'm also an ITIL certified version 3 expert and a Microsoft certified systems engineer. I have over 25 years of project management experience in the IT industry. I worked for Hewlett-Packard as a complex problem manager, and in this role, I take a very complex situation that is affecting an HP customer's enterprise production environment, and I manage a project with a virtual technical team that quickly resolves the issue. So remember, you don't have to have the term project manager in your job title to actually be a project manager. Our presenter for this session is me. And our topic is Understanding Organizational Structures. The PMP examination is based on version 4 of the Guide to Project Management, Variety of Knowledge. This month's PMP exam study group call continues to focus on the first three chapters of the PMBOK. In this session, we will provide an understanding of the impact of organizational structures on project management capabilities. Version 4 of the PMBOK changed a few things in this area, and I will provide insight and practical examples of everything you need to know in order to build your critical knowledge mass and pass the PMP exam on the first attempt. If you haven't already downloaded a PDF copy of the presentation for this session, please do so. If you are in the live FreeC virtual conference room that we have running on the bridge right now, the file is in the lobby. To find out how to download the files if you're listening to the podcast later on, what you need to do is go to www.pmlessonslearned.com, and in the left-hand navigation column, you'll see a link to Files and Presentations. So follow the directions in there, and that will lead you to the PDF file. The file name for the session is PMLL Understanding Organizational Structures, with today's date, the 3rd of March, 2011. It's a PDF file. That's the file name. The title is also the same thing, PMLL Understanding Organizational Structures, 3MAR11. And also in the file area, you'll see the content from the last couple of years' worth of conference calls that we've had for our monthly exam study group. There's also an updated PMBOK version 4 brain dump in there as well. And if you look in the past monthly PMP exam study group calls folder, you'll see some other files in there. I cleaned up most of those a few months back, but there are some interesting ones in there. The ones I mostly cleaned out were based on version 3 of the PMBOK. So if you look in there, make sure you understand what you're grabbing. Also, the internet is a very big place. So if you're trying to grab study material from the internet, make sure you know what you're grabbing. Make sure you understand which source you're getting the material from and its PMBOK source as well. You want to make sure that you're using version 4 of the PMBOK. Everything that we have here is based on version 4. You should remember there's roughly about a 30% difference from version 3 to version 4, and it's pretty much all in the processes and their ITTOs or inputs, outputs, and tools and techniques. But just be aware of what you're using. People will sell you anything on the internet, and there are still a lot of people selling version 3 material out there. So make sure you know the base before you plunk your money down. And finally, this is the PM Lessons Learned monthly PMP exam study group conference call and podcast. If you're on a shorter time scale and are willing to make a commitment to actively participate and take turns presenting study group material, our weekly PMP exam study group may be the right place for you. So for more information, send an email to pmpstudy@pmlessonslearned.com. And someone will get back to you. And they're always looking for new members in the weekly study group. They just started a new round a couple weeks back, so you won't have missed too much. And they go in a continual cycle, so you'll be able to pick up what you didn't grab in the back end. So we are PMLessonsLearned.com, project managers helping project managers to make a difference. Thank you in advance for those participating in this month's live conference call and those that download the podcast. Let's get started. So looking at the slide deck here, Starting on slide number one, we have our standard welcoming slide that lets you know this is the monthly PMP exam study group. You also see a list of all the calls that we run here at PM Lessons Learned, this being the first Thursday of the month. This is the monthly PMP exam study group call. On the second Thursday of the month, we have our PM Lessons Learned job shop call. That's where folks who are in transition or need help with resumes or things like that can go to receive some help. And then on the third Thursday of each month, we have our PM Lessons Learned Best Practices call. That's where our host and founder, Henry Will, will bring in an author, a practitioner, something along those lines, and talk about some best practice topics. So if you have some time on the third Thursday of the month or the second Thursday of the month, they're all at the same time and the same phone number. So come join us. We'd love to have you here. You can also listen to the podcast by going to www.pmlessonslearned.com and see where to download the podcast. We're also up on iTunes as well. I know Henry just loaded a bunch of recent podcasts up there. So go to iTunes and search for us, PM Lessons Learned, and you'll see that we're up there. We're actually pretty popular. Of the 4,500 marketing and business podcasts, we're in the top 2%. Can't remember the number off the top of my head, but we're in the top 2%, so we're doing very well. So by all means, go check us out there. And also join our Yahoo and LinkedIn groups as well. The name is PM Lessons Learned, pretty catchy name, so that's what we will carry on with. Speaking of carry on, let's move to the next slide and talk about our call norms. This is, I hope, to be an interactive call. I'd like you to participate. So if you have a question, you want to make a point or anything like that, I've muted your lines, so you need to do a *6 to unmute your line. Get my attention, yell out my name. I don't mind if you interrupt me at all, and then that way I'll stop talking and you can start talking and ask a question, and then when you're done, I'll ask you to do another *6 and remute your phone, and we'll carry on. Okay, we don't like to talk over each other. Moving on to the next slide, here's our email address for anyone who has any questions. You want to volunteer for anything, we'd love to have volunteers to do podcast presentations. We've got some communication stuff that we need to have done, volunteer coordinators, tons of different things that folks can do if you'd like to give back to the profession a bit. Here's our email address, pmpstudy@pmlessonslearned.com. Moving on to the next slide. We have the legalese that goes along with this session. I really would like you to use these slides as additional study material. So you'll see there aren't as many graphics in these slides as you might find in other people's slides. And that's because if you're driving your car, walking your dog, or whatever, it's a bit hard to see graphics if you're listening to the podcast. So there's mostly words in here, and those words come from mainly one study guide, the Project Management Professional Exam Study Guide, the 5th edition, written by Kim Heldman, put out by John Wiley and Sons as part of their SciBec series. There's the ISBN number there. It's a really good deal if you're looking for a study guide for around $40 U.S., depending on where you get it from. You get a paperback, 2-inch thick study guide with a lot of practice questions, the study material, and a CD with a bunch of extra practice, online tests, things along those lines that will get your critical mass going. So it's a very good deal, very good value for the price. You know, I'm using this information with the permission of the publisher. I'm a registered instructor with John Wiley. And then I'm going to move to the next slide. And we have the title for our session today. And the title of the session is Understanding Organizational Structures. And as I mentioned, today is March 3rd, 2011. So we move to the next slide and get into the meat of what's going on. What we find is as we are working through our organizations and our projects, we've got to do a balancing act. Why? Because conflict is everywhere. And we want to try to avoid conflict whenever we can, or at least manage conflict. If you can avoid it, that's one way to manage it. And the conflict mainly comes around three different areas: authority, responsibility, and accountability. And looking at the definitions there for those who are driving your car or walking the dog, authority is the power granted to individuals by the people who work around them or in their organizations, and it's so they can make final decisions. You'll have heard in some of our other sessions the many different types of authority and power that are out there: constitutional power, referent power, legitimate power, technical power, all kinds of different things. We're worried about, in this case, the organizational, the hierarchical power, because depending on how your organization is structured, you will or you will not have the power or the authority. Then there's responsibility. That's the obligation incurred by individuals in their roles in the formal organization to effectively perform assessments. You accountable, you're responsible, you're the person doing the work, you're the doer, if you will. And then there's accountability, that's being answerable for the satisfactory completion of whatever your assignment happens to be. And down at the bottom of the slide, there's basically a little equation that says accountability is equal to authority plus responsibility. So you mix and match the amount of authority and accountability or responsibility in an algebraic equation, and these are the things you're balancing in order to make sure that you understand how to avoid conflict. So I'm going to move on to the next slide. And you wind up with conflict because of the way you're organized. And in the PMP exam, they primarily focus on three separate types of organizations. They are functional, projectized, and matrix. There's a graphic there that shows you just a little titch of what you see in the slides to come. But those are the three types of organizations that you'll need to pay attention to for the exam. Of course, there are lots of other types in between these three, but the exam focuses mainly on these three, so these are the ones you need to pay attention to. Moving on to the next slide, we'll get into the functional organization. And that is what I'm sure you're all used to seeing. What you're looking at is an organization chart of a functional organization, where at the top you have whatever executive office of your company, of your group, whatever that happens to be. Doesn't matter how high you go up. If you're in a functional organization, they're all roughly structured the same. You have some executive running things, and then you have different functions. In the example that we have here, which is from one of Harold Kirzner's latest project management book, you see engineering, operations, financial, and the like. Each one of these are functional groups. They have a real strong set of expertise in their relative areas, so they can really be strong in those organizations. And then moving down, it depends on how many levels you might have in that organization. In an engineering side of things, you might have a dozen different engineering groups, or maybe only one. Who knows? And then below, if you have multiple groups, multiple departments, you may have multiple sections, and it just keeps on going down and down and down, each one with more tightly controlled functional responsibility. You know, their scope is more limited as you go down is another way to say that. And so everything is in a nice, neat stovepipe, if you will, vertically. And that's basically all a functional organization is. Moving on to the next slide, we talk about some of the advantages you'll need to worry about for the exam. There's a bunch of them here. I'll read through them slowly but surely. We'll get there. The first is it's much easier to budget and control costs if you're in a functional organization because everything rolls very nicely right up to the top. And you don't have to worry about which group or which project or whatever because it's all in one functional stovepipe. There's better technical control. Why? Because you've got probably one technical arm that becomes the experts in anything that that organization needs to pay attention to. The technology is very focused is another way to say that. There's also flexibility in the use of manpower in a stovepipe or a functional organization. You can move people around any way you want, and you're all in the same organization. You're not changing from one manager to another for the most part. One higher-level manager to another. So flexibility and movement is pretty easy. You have a broad manpower base depending upon how large your organization is. You can select and choose the types of people that you want. There may be some functional disciplines and things like that to pay attention to. The accounting department doesn't mess with the technology department. Pretty easy to see that, right? So those are the types of things you worry about when you're talking about functional lines. You have a good control over your people because they're all out of that stovepipe. You understand who they are and their capabilities. So you have a reasonable idea of what's happening with your people. You have some good, strong communication channels, most likely, because everything goes up and down the pipes. Sometimes it goes across to another functional organization, but for the most part, everything channels up and down your stovepipe. And then a lot of times you can quickly react, depending upon if you have a capability problem. You can quickly move a person from Project A to Project B if you're in a functionalized organization, because they all report to the same manager. Okay, I'm going to move to the next slide. And now let's talk about the disadvantages of a functional organization. And when we start going here now, we'll find there might be no one single person directly responsible for the total project. Depending upon how things are organized in a functional organization, you might have maybe one project manager, but that project manager has to go grab people from another organization. There isn't any one person responsible for the whole thing. So it can be sometimes very difficult to understand where people's loyalties are. You'll see that in a moment, and who's directly responsible for the project, because somebody in the accounting department might be able to influence your project. And what good is that? it doesn't help too much. And there was also no project-oriented emphasis necessary for the project tasks. Well, that's pretty obvious. You're in a functional organization, and they don't care so much about projects, perhaps. Now, you could take steps to bolster that in your organization, sure, but for the most part, you have to take those extra steps in order to make sure that you have a project-oriented emphasis in a functionalized organization. And then if you've got multiple projects, coordination between those projects can sometimes be very difficult to work through. So you have to pay attention to that as well. And how do you coordinate work going on with Project A, Project B, Project C, and the like? Decisions are sometimes aimed at whoever has the most strength, the most power, the most whatever. So if there's a very popular leader for functional group A and not so popular for another functional group, perhaps there's going to be some conflict there and be difficult to manage. Why? Because you've got conflict and you have to manage the conflict. There might not be any customer focal point. Probably that would be the salesperson most likely, but in the project side of things, you may not have so much of a customer focal point to make sure the requirements are relayed down appropriately. You also might have trouble pinpointing responsibility if something goes amiss or finding someone responsible to make sure the planning is done for a certain piece, because maybe the planning is split between a manufacturing function and an engineering function or a technology function. Hard sometimes to figure out where to go. Response to customer needs might be a bit slow as well, because sometimes these organizations can't turn very quickly for a customer point of view. And when you start working through things, motivation and innovation can be somewhat decreased because people want to work on Project A, but they're stuck on Project B, and there may not be an easy way to get over there. It'll vary with this one, so that's why it's down the bottom a little bit. It's not as much of a disadvantage as some of the ones closer to the top. And then finally, ideas tend to be functionally oriented. Why? You're in a functional organization, so they're going to be technology-oriented, process-oriented, those types of things. And those ideas may not coincide very well with whatever project goals might be out there in that organization. Okay, so those are some of the disadvantages of a functional organization. And some of these will be on the test as well. Okay, so I'm going to move on to the next slide. And we'll move into a projectized organization. And the graphic that we see here shows yet another organization chart, but this time underneath the manager up at the top, we have three projects listed, Project A, Project B, Project C. And now in this organization, everything is organized around the project. So underneath the individual project squares on this chart, you see in this example, we have an engineering group and a manufacturing group. You could have anything you want there. A sales group, separate sales group. If it's an IT project, separate coding groups. If it is a construction project, you might have separate earth moving groups, separate plumbers, separate electricians. You can figure out what that is. But basically, everything is owned by the project. You'll have as many functional groups as you need, but they're going to be all reporting to a project manager in this case. So everything is focused strictly through a project manager. Moving on to the next slide, let's get into the advantages of a projectized organization. Now we have complete line authority over the project. Looking at that organization chart, it's very clear who's responsible for that project. I won't call it one-stop shopping, because you can certainly stop along the way at some of those functional bodies underneath the project manager, but everything stops at the project manager for the most part. You have great lines of authority. The participants work directly for the project manager. If you're a requirements person, business analyst, you're not going to work for the business analyst department. You're going to be working for the project manager. And so it's very clear who you're working for. If you have an unprofitable product line, they're going to figure that out, because I'm sure they're keeping records of costs, schedule things along those lines, and there's got to be hurdle rates. Think back a couple months back when we had our project selection methods, and last time when we talked about phase control and kill meetings, murder boards, those types of things. There are financial hurdles that every project needs to atone to, if you will, every now and again, whatever that time frame is, monthly, quarterly, annually, whatever. And if they don't meet those hurdle rates, that project could be gone. And it's much easier to control at this level in a projectized organization, because things are very clear as to where they roll to. Communication channels are much stronger within the project, because everything is right there within the project. Now, if you start going over to the side to Project B, maybe not so much. but at least within the project, the communication channels are very strong. And the staff can maintain expertise on that particular type of project and not worry about sharing key personnel with some other group if they feel that might be necessary. They can maintain their own little fiefdom, if you will, and not have to worry about sharing things for the most part, unless they're in that unprofitable project, and then probably some of the other project managers could come raiding if they know that project is about to be canceled. And because they can come raiding and do things, reaction to issues is very short, very rapid reaction time. As long as they can recognize something is amiss and need to deal with it, they can apply resources relatively quickly and react right away and resolve things. And because they have all of that, the people involved in each individual project probably are a lot more loyal to that particular project manager, that particular project, than they are to maybe even the company at large, or certainly to other projects along in the organization as well. And then finally, upper management maintains more free time for executive decision making. Why? Because now that they can actually have some of their teams make decisions, and they are freed up to worry about the next project or other executive decisions that they have to make. They can delegate more easily because they've got control over the people in that stovepipe. All right, moving on to the next slide. And now we talk about the disadvantages of projectized organizations, because we're duplicating a lot of stuff. We have separate engineering groups, separate manufacturing groups, separate accounting groups, probably. Consider that going across an organization, it's going to cost more because you're duplicating effort. Remember that balancing act I talked about on the first slide. You've got to balance all this stuff, and with better functionality, better turnaround time, better ability to react to things comes higher cost. And there's a tendency to retain personnel long after they are needed on a project. Why? Because they may not want to let them go, but that's something you have to deal with if you're a good project manager and trying to make sure your company is moving along very nicely. There's going to be a time when you're not going to need person A, and if you don't need person A and another project needs them that are also contributing finances to your company, why not share? That way everybody wins. You're maximizing your shareholder wealth if you're a publicly owned company, or the owner's wealth if you're not, but you're certainly maximizing wealth, so sharing is a good thing when you can do that. Now, the technology may suffer a bit because there isn't any one technology group anymore that focuses on a technology. Instead of being very deep in one or two technologies, you might be much more shallow across several technologies. This is one way to look at that. So by suffering means maybe not as deep as what it could be. And you also want to make sure you're looking into the future, because unless all of your projects are all along the same lines and you have one forward-looking, maybe advanced development group or something along those lines, that can look forward into the technology future and see what's coming and keep everything up to date, that you could suffer because you're stuck with one technology and you don't want to move from that technology. Speaking of the technology, the control of all those specialists that wield that technology. So we need to make sure that as you're moving along, those specialists that might be more across organizations are covered. Make sure that you use them effectively and that they make sure that all the technology that you need for your entire company is covered. And you can't control that very well, is what I'm trying to say here. And then perhaps there's lack of technology interchange between projects. It depends on your organization, but maybe Project A has something they're hoarding. They don't like to share. Maybe they don't like to cooperate so much with other projects. But you can try to foster that as much as possible, but it's something you have to pay attention to, for sure. And then finally, lack of career continuity and opportunities for project personnel. If you're on Project A, maybe there's a better opportunity for you in Project B, but you might not be able to leave Project A for whatever reason. Maybe the main reason is because your project manager really wants you to hang around in his project. Okay, moving on to the next slide. Now we want to begin to talk about matrix development. And a matrix organization, it's just like it sounds and combines, I like to say, the best of both worlds, the functional and the projectized, but maybe not so much. It depends on how it's implemented. So on this slide, we see yet another organization chart, and we see a matrix here. We see the executive person up at the top, And then we see functional organizations, engineering, operations, finance, anything else you might want to put in there, manufacturing, whatever it might be, procurement, functional organizations. And then horizontally cutting across all of those, you have your projects, project XYZ, ABC, whatever you want to pay attention to. And with those horizontal projects, the project responsibility cuts across all those vertical functional responsibilities, and that's what forms the matrix, where things intersect. The intersection of engineering and project Y is where that work is done. The intersection of operations and project A is where that work is done. So you've got a matrix there, and there are many different ways to build a matrix, as we'll see in a moment. It all depends on what you want to set up. So let's move to the next slide and talk about the ground rules for setting up a matrix development. And the first one starts off as participants, for the most part, need to really make sure you can have your people spend full time on your project. Why? Because that makes sure they're focused entirely on your project and not half on yours, half on somebody else's. You make sure that you have the loyalty. You have the loyalty that you need from your people so that they can carry on. And that's a good thing to have. There's also the need for both horizontal and vertical channels for commitments, negotiating, communicating, that type of thing. So you need to make sure that even though you're a matrix organization, you can move diagonally is one way to say that. You've got horizontal projects, vertical functions. You need to make sure that you have communications, commitments, channels, so that when you have a conflict, you can deal with it. Is they can negotiate for resources, because all the engineering resources are going to live in the engineering department, and you've got to make sure you can pull the right number of resources for your project, and so don't the other project managers as well. So you're all competing for the same scarce resources, if you will. And the next thing to pay attention to is there should be already set up some effective methods of conflict resolution. So if something happens, you have a quick, easy way to resolve things. Now, that might be that the project manager with the most power wins, or the functional manager with the most power wins, and who the functional manager is aligned with from a project point of view, but you design your organization based on that, and you'll see that in a moment. And all managers must have input into the planning process. So if project manager A focuses mainly on technology projects, while project manager B focuses mainly on construction projects, then they both have to have input into what's going to happen next. What does the overall company need to invest in to make sure that they have enough resources, enough capabilities for the future? So all the managers, functional and to a great extent project managers, need to make sure that they have a relatively level playing field, if you will, in the planning process. And then finally, the horizontal lines must be permitted to operate as separate entities in a really strong project organization. If upper level management, functional management starts second guessing the project managers, things aren't going to go so well. So those horizontal project managers need to have some level of separation, maybe not autonomy fully, but at least separation so that they can manage their projects. And I'm sure there's an accounting department wanting to keep track of costs and schedule and things like that. So you need enough separation to be able to control all that stuff as well. So you can keep your control accounts going and understand which projects are costing you money, which projects are not, which ones are ahead of schedule, behind schedule, over budget, under budget, and make your decisions, as we talked about earlier, which projects are blown away because they're not profitable or not expected to be profitable, while some other new opportunities come along that they need to free up some resources for. Moving on to the next slide, we get into the advantages of a matrix organization. And in this slide, we're talking about pure matrix organization. We'll be talking about something in between, if you will, in a little bit. But on a pure matrix organization, right now the project manager maintains the maximum project control. That person is in charge. They have to go through the line manager for sure, because all of the resources are owned by the vertical functional managers, those are also called line managers. So they must maintain project control anyway over those people. If there are independent policies, they must be maintained for each project, because depending upon what areas you're working in, you might have to have different ways to do things process A might be different in project X than it is in project Y. Maybe there's an extra step or two or three, whatever the case might be. But you need to make sure that procedures and governing policies work differently. Maybe one of the projects works for government entities, and there's a whole set of rules around how you should deal with government agencies around the world. And maybe Project B doesn't have to worry about that, so they can do other things that Project A is not allowed to do. Those types of things you have to pay attention to. Also, the project manager can commit company resources. It's always good that the project manager can do that. So, yes, I will commit to providing this project by X date. They need to have that for sure. Rapid responses are possible because you are looking at things from a project point of view and you can see the need for changes more easily, more rapidly, and you can make the changes because you own the resources to a great extent once they're assigned to your project. If they're not assigned to your project, then you've got some issues for sure and trying to grab some more scarce resources. But for the resources for the project that you own, you can turn them around much more quickly. We have to remember those functional organizations in this type of company primarily exist to support projects. So they have to relinquish some control to the project managers, and that's ingrained in the company. If that's not ingrained in the company, then you're going to have a very weak matrix, as you'll find out in a couple of slides from now, or you're not going to be very successful. And the other advantage with the Pyramid Matrix organization is each person has a home after the project is over. Why? Because they go back to the functional organization, and they can be made available for yet another project. So you don't have to worry about the fact, well, if once my project is done, you'd be fired, laid off, whatever the case may be, you'll be out of a job. You just go back into the pool, so to speak, if you will. And then conflicts are hopefully more minimal because those requiring hierarchical referrals are more easily resolved. The hierarchy is there for you to use if necessary. So you take advantage of it when it's to your advantage to do that. Okay, and then authority and responsibility are shared. That's called an advantage here. It could also be a disadvantage as well, depending upon how nicely everybody plays in the sandbox. All the managers play nicely in the sandbox. You can do very well. If they don't, well, not so much. It depends on what you're doing. And then stress is distributed amongst the team and the functional manager, so everyone's not going under the same concerns, the same stresses. Things are spread out a little bit more in a matrix organization. Disadvantages of a matrix organization on the next slide. We start talking about how do we communicate, how do we report, things along those lines. So if you have an organization with a lot of vertical functions and a lot of projects, things can get confusing with that whole multi-dimensional flow. How do you do information flow? And if work has to flow from one project to the next, one function to the next, how does that happen? It can be somewhat confusing. Also, the dual reporting part can be very confusing. A person is reporting to a project manager and a functional manager, and which manager do they pay most attention to? Then it'll vary by organization. For the most part, they're going to pay attention to the manager that writes their review and gives them their salary, gives them their raises, things along those lines, gives them their promotions. That's where their livelihood is going to come from, so they're going to pay attention to those people more often than not. A lot of times in a peer matrix organization, the priorities can change depending upon which project is more in favor at one point in time as opposed to another. So pay attention to that. And because there's so many projects, so many functions, there's always going to be conflict around somehow, around there some way, some shape, some form. So that just the potential for continuous conflict is there, so the potential for continuous conflict resolution needs to be there as well. And the functional managers might wind up being biased depending upon their own set of priorities. Maybe they like a technology type of functional manager, so they like the more technological projects better than a construction project or a documentation project, something along those lines. So the functional managers may have a bias in the resources that they assign to a particular project. Something to worry about as well. And then as they're doing those assignments, you've got to balance the power back and forth between functional and project organizations, who's got the most power with the biggest project, that type of thing. And it can ebb and flow greatly from one month to the next. So it's certainly a disadvantage because it's not consistent. And because people have that dual reporting thing, they can be a bit more ambiguous about their job, their role, how they're doing. Because one manager may be telling them they're doing great, another one maybe not as much. It really depends upon the managers involved. They really have to work well together. And then finally, because they have that ambiguity many times, they feel they don't have control over their own destiny and how they can control things. And that might cause them to leave the organization or something along those lines. It depends. But a good manager, either functional or project, is going to know some of these things, and they're going to be prepared and actually behave in a manner that minimizes these disadvantages and maximizes a lot of the advantages. Okay, so that's the pure matrix organization. And now we're going to talk about the different types of matrix organizations, because there's a few, three that are on the exam that you have to pay attention to. There are actually more than three, but the three for the exam are strong, weak, and balanced. And they are a big balancing act depending upon how things are organized. How are you controlling the day-to-day performance of your workers? And how are you controlling your technology? How are you controlling your cost? How are you controlling whatever else? But the main ones to pay attention to are worker performance, resource performance, and command of the technology. So those are the main things to try to balance as you're trying to figure out what type of matrix organization to use. So I'll move to the next slide, and let's talk about the daily performance part of that. Who controls daily performance? And if we look at it from a project manager's perspective, now we are in the matrix organization and trying to figure out how we're going to work things through. In a strong matrix, the project manager is the person who controls the daily performance of the individuals. In a weak matrix, it's the line manager who actually controls the daily performance of an individual. It may not be so good for a project if the line manager is controlling it. And in the middle, if you have a balanced matrix, maybe there's a project coordinator, a project leader, something along those lines. So somebody with a bit more project bent, if you will, than the line manager, but certainly not as much as a project manager. And they're there to identify issues and make sure that the resources from day to day are focused in the right direction and everyone's dancing to the same tune and at the same time. And going in the same direction, by the way, as well. Let's move to the next slide and look at work history. From a work history point of view, you need to balance things as well as you're trying to figure out which is better, which way you want to do things, a strong matrix or a weak matrix. And it's still from the project manager's perspective. In a strong matrix, most of the time these people have a long history with the company. They've been around for a very long time, and they're promoted from within. So they've got not only the legitimate hierarchical power, they've also got the referent power because they've been around for a long time. Maybe they're a technology expert, so they have technological power within an organization. They're recognized because they've been there for a while, and they can form that strong matrix and be the project leader that is required for that particular job. And with a weak matrix, perhaps not so much. Someone come in from the outside in a weak matrix. Maybe they have a very short company history. Maybe they're not as recognized as much as an expert. Who knows? But they just don't have the same level of history. They may not be the same type of expert or have the referent power that the strong matrix does. And then the balanced one is in the middle. It's probably more along the lines of the strong matrix in that they're promoted from within and have a long history, but maybe they are just to a lesser extent, better way to say that. They have the same type of mix, but it's to a lesser extent. They're not as powerful as a strong project manager, but they have enough to make sure that folks pay attention to them. Okay? And now let's move to the next slide, and we'll talk about some of the different balances that we wind up having here. What you're looking at is a couple of figures from the PMBOK. The top one is figure 2.9, and that one talks about weak organization structure. And what we see here is another organization chart. We see the functional managers across the top. And the project coordination, because it's a matrix, is done horizontally across those projects. But there is one project coordination, an individual off to the side someplace, maybe, who's working things. But sometimes those functional managers are doing the project coordination work as well, as we pointed out earlier. And underneath each of the functional managers, you see either a gray or a white rectangle that says staff inside of there. The white ones all working on the project A. The gray ones are all working on project B, perhaps. And if there is a project coordinator, they're trying to just herd as many of these cats, if you will, at the behest of the line manager in order to get the project done. So it's a very difficult job because there isn't a whole lot of loyalty or power wielded by a project coordinator in a weak matrix. Now, if we go down to the bottom of the slide, to the next graphic there, we have a pretty similar chart, but now one of the functional managers has an extra function attached to them, and that's project manager. So maybe you have a project manager or two or three or four, but they report to a functional manager, and that functional manager can be anybody. For that matter, it doesn't have to be a project thing. That we'll get to that in the next slide, but it can be any place. So the organization has been thinking about project management anyway, but not enough that they're going to create a separate function for it, so much so that it's a different department. So they grab a few people, say, you are now project managers, have them report to an engineering manager or a finance manager or something along those lines. I've seen both of those and a few others. And they manage the project across things. They have more power than that project coordinator up at the top. That's that balancing act that we saw two slides ago. So they can get more done. You could still have a project coordinator as well, for that matter. But the point is, you actually have some people that are named project managers, and they can wield some power. It's just that it's not necessarily as a separate line function. It's built into the organization in some way. So the weak management organizations have no dedicated project managers, but balanced ones do, is another way to say that. Move on to the next slide, and we get to the stronger types of matrices. The figure up at the top is yet another organization chart with the functional managers, but now you notice in the upper right-hand corner of that chart, as one of the functional line managers, we have a project management function. So now we have a manager of project managers. And reporting to that individual are all of the project managers. Now we're in a real strong organization. These people have authority. There is a separate project management function, so everyone in the corporation understands that the project managers must manage the project so they can cut across. And they have much more strength. They can still use that project coordinator as well as necessary. So the dotted line around things for the project gray, we'll call it, because those circles are around a set of grayed out staff going across the functional managers. They have much more power, so it's easier for them to manage the project. It's a strong matrix. The power is definitely there. Everybody can see it, and it's easier to deal with. And then finally, we've got a composite, the bottom one down there. And this could be on the exam as well, so pay attention to a composite. It's a little bit different in that it's a combination of strong and of balanced. Because while you have a manager of project managers and separate project managers doing things, you still might also have some project coordination being done just within a functional managers group. And any functional manager worth their salt might not want to allow somebody from another group to manage one of their own stovepipe projects, if you will. So that's when you wind up with a composite. They're going to manage their own little project to do a technology upgrade or build a new building or something along those lines. Who knows what? But they'll be doing their own separate project within their own stovepipe, within their own fiefdom. And that's called a composite. And a lot of times you'll see that composite structure within organizations because they might be very large. If the organization is very large, then you have a higher probability that you're going to see a composite than you will in a smaller organization. Okay, we're almost done here. We have two more slides to go. Next is we're going to move to the next slide and talk about comparing all these matrix structures. For the test, these are the ones you need to be worried about for the exam. They're the weak, the balanced, and the strong matrix types. We're looking at a table for those driving the car or walking the dog. Across the top, weak, balanced, and strong matrix. The rows are things like the project manager's title, their focus, their power, their style, and who they report to. So in a weak matrix organization, a project manager's title will most likely be a coordinator, a leader, or an expediter. You won't see the word manager in there. But in a balanced matrix or a strong matrix organization, you most likely will see the term manager there. It'll say project manager. So the title is definitely in embellished, if you will, in the balanced and the strong matrix organization. The focus on the next row down of a project manager in a weak matrix organization might be split. As you saw in that composite type of thing, maybe they're managing things only within their line management side of things. Or maybe they've got only a small amount of focusing they're doing across a couple of the functional areas, but it's not very strong. But in the balanced and the strong matrix organizations, they can do both projects and project work. They are the kings and queens, if you will, so they can get what they need for their projects and make it happen. The focus is much more directed, if you will. And then the next row down, the project manager's power. In a weak matrix, probably not so much. They have minimal authority and power. Yeah, they might have a charter statement that says they have the authority to do X, but if there's nothing to back that up in the organization, it might be kind of hard for them to do anything. But at least they have some power, but albeit minimal. And then in a balanced matrix organization, they'll have some balance of power and authority, depending upon how things are set up, because they can go in either direction. And then in a strong matrix, they're full-time on projects, so they have a ton of power that they can wield for that one project alone. They probably don't have as much power on somebody else's project, but on their one project, they're full-time on it, there's a ton of power there. Next row down, organization style. A weak organization is the most like a functional organization. This could actually be an exam question. Which organization style is most like a functional organization? The answer is going to be a weak matrix. And then on the balance matrix side, I think it's a blend of both weak and strong matrix. Sometimes there's some things going up a functional chain there. And on the strong matrix side, it's the most projectized organization. You see definitive projects across going horizontally. You see definitive project managers, and it's very clear who's in charge. And then finally, who the project manager reports to. In a weak matrix, they can report to a functional manager, to a line manager, depending what term you'd like to use. And most of the time, they probably will, because they're only doing things in a very small way, if you will. In a balanced matrix, you can report to a functional manager, but you'll share some authority. And best case, in a balanced matrix, that person will be reporting to a manager or project managers, or maybe another project manager, maybe their junior project manager doing something like that could happen as well. And then finally, in the strong matrix, they report to the manager or project managers for the most part. You'll see some differences sometimes, but that's who they tend to report to. And we'll move to the next slide and talk about some of those differences, because the last slide we'll be talking about today in this session is a project management office. This is a big buzzword in a lot of organizations. Oh, we need a project management office. But what is that? What are you going to do with a project management office? I'll tell you, it's a big, broad continuum is what it is. There isn't any one definition of a project management office. And every organization you go into that has a project management office of some kind will be different for the most part because of that range. It could be in any of those structures we went over tonight can have a project management office built into it, anything we've gone over in this session. You can have multiple PMOs in a very large organization. I work for Hewlett-Packard. We get dozens of PMOs. Every group seems to have their own project management office, because everyone has their own little fiefdom, if you will. And nobody wants to share. They want their own PMO so they can manage things their way. Let's talk a bit about what a project management office can do for organizations. In that continuum, for the most part, what they attempt to do is provide some level of centralized expertise in project management. And what varies is that level. This can range anything from one person who's collected a tool here, and they've gone off to the internet, they decide they want to go for their PMP, and they found a couple of tools in one of the study guides. Hey, this is a really good tool. Here's a risk register. Let's use this risk register. Okay? They found that risk register. They are now the project management office because they have that risk register in their hands on their laptop, and everyone comes to them for a risk register. That's an example of a project management office. And maybe they've grabbed a few more things, so they are the tools guru, the form guru, the checklist guru. They are the project management office for that organization. Now go to the other end of the spectrum. And the other end of the spectrum, in a strong matrix organization, most likely the manager of project managers is also the manager of the project management office, if you will. And that office, along with maybe with some financial folks as well, have the authority to create projects, to fund projects, to kill projects, to set out hurdle rates so that as projects are being developed and you come to a phase review, we talked about phases last time in the last session around project types. Go check that out. And at the end of each phase, you can have a phase review. And if you don't meet your hurdle rates from a financial or a schedule point of view, your project can be killed. Here's where the authority for that to occur comes from, is right here in a project management office. Doesn't have to be, depending upon your type of organization. But for the most part, if there is a project management office, it'll have that capability, if it's a strong one, of course. And functions range from just an advisory thing as well, if it's a weak type of project management office. Who has the forms, well, maybe give me an opinion. How should I do X? And they can give some advisory capacities or to a formal gateway authority. You don't go beyond point X without the approval of the project management office. And some project managers can report to the PMO or not. It depends on your organization. We have plenty of project managers that we can point at around any organization that don't necessarily report to the PMO. Okay? So project management offices are a wide continuum. The PMI likes to think they have a lot more power. So for the test, you want to make sure that you understand there is a range there, there is a continuum there, but for the most part, the project management office is where the functions are collected, the approvals and disapprovals, if you will, rejections, better way to say it, are done, and for the most part, in a matrix organization, project managers report there. And that's what to remember for the test, for the most part. Okay, so with that, I think we are ready to think about questions. So everyone's line should be unmuted now. Are there any questions out there on organizational structures?
I got a question. This is Judy.
Yeah, Judy, go ahead.
In the initiating process, working with stakeholders, it would be helpful to know how to classify the stakeholders along these lines, won't they?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
How the organization is structured.
Absolutely, because if you've got a technology project, whoever is managing the technology is going to be a very heavy-duty stakeholder in your project. Well, someone who's the manufacturing vice president, maybe not so much. Yeah, exactly.
So we can really connect these two areas.
I think so, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions out there? Okay, so that's it for this session. As a reminder, PM Lessons Learned conducts 3 conference calls each month. This is the PMP monthly exam study group conference call and podcast that we're on right now. Why? Because it's the first Thursday of the month. On the second Thursday of each month, we have the PM Lessons Learned Job Shop call, where folks in transition or with a need to potentially identify career paths and things along those lines can go to help each other. And then finally, on the third Thursday of each month, we hold the PM Lessons Learned Best Practice Call. This call provides presentations on a wide variety of project management topics and soft skills, things along those lines. Okay, so that's it for this session of the PM Lessons Learned Monthly PMP Exam Conference Call and Podcast. I'll again thank the live participants on this conference call and everyone that downloads the podcast. You've been doing a great job over the past couple of years of downloading podcasts. We've done over 12,000 downloads in the past couple of years from www.pmlessonslearned.com website and also from iTunes as well. So thank you to everyone who's downloaded the podcast as well. Thank you for that support. I'll remind you that we are pmlessonslearned.com, project managers helping project managers to make a difference. My name is Dana Safford. So long and keep on learning.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project managers helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.